Mr. Anderson, you were seeking the floor, I believe.
Presentation so you can see me cry. But I understand it's out of order, so I'm going to come back with my full. I agree against this. I speak, of course, against the adoption of new substitute House Bill number 224. And I don't do this very lightly. I do it because I feel that action taken like this is against the best interests of the citizens of the state of Alaska. The reason why I believe this is that I think you are creating an illusion. You are putting in hope, and at the same time, you have nothing to back it up. As I understand it, a basic concept of House Bill, or big substitute House Bill number 324, is that non-renewable resources should not be employed to meet ongoing expenses of state government. Speaking as a legislator, I must refrain in admitting my doubts about that concept. Even though my view may not square with the common wisdom of the time, but of this I am sure, conceptually, royalty income and production taxes are just as much receipts for non-renewable resources as are bonuses. It is unclear why one type of petroleum revenue is barred from one use in the operating other types would not be barred. Perhaps it is recognized that some use of non-renewable resource revenue has to be included in the operating budget as a practical matter. Perhaps it is argued that the state constitution prohibits a dedication of royalty income and severance taxes, but allows a dedication of only receipts. But if legal arguments are the reason for the distinction implicit in committee substitute House Bill number 324, then I suggest that at least royalty income and bonus bills are on the same constitutional footing. Mr. Speaker, members of your Finance Committee have shown leadership in attempting to get better information for the legislature's budgetary planning. I have personal knowledge of the efforts made by Representative Cooper, for example, to increase pipeline costs to that committee. You would agree that these efforts are inappropriate. Most Alaskans would agree that they emanate from a high sense of public responsibility. In that light, the consideration of House Bill number 324, at this time is striking. All of us know that some estimates have been made of some matters that should be known before creation of a permanent fund, and that these estimates may not be proved accurate. Indeed, it has been the very uncertainty of some issues, the cost of the pipeline, the amount of bonuses to be received from a bulk sale, that has led to the introduction of measures to tax oil and gas in place. These uncertainties should be cautions against the passage of this session of a bill that treats the unknown as known. Committee substitute for House Bill number 324 assumes that the best use of 90% of income from bonuses is in revenue sharing and, in particular, but unspecified, loan or grant programs or whatever. Although a promise of the bill is a desire to avoid a swelling state bureaucracy, the measure may increase the size of bureaucracies at local government levels by compelling a movement of programs from one level of government, the state, to local governments because of a prohibition against using bonus receipts directed by the state except for limited purposes. I doubt that such an artificially excessive movement of progress will prove to be cost-effective or in public interest. I believe such a movement of progress would be especially experimental to the interests of residents of the unorganized borough. If state functions should be delegated to local governments, then that is a process that should be considered on its own merits. It should not occur as a byproduct of legislation restricting the state's use of its own resources. Committee substitute in House Bill Number 324 assumes that pressure from Alaska citizens for expenditures are essentially wrong, and that people's representatives need greater insulation from these pressures to protect the public from itself. I believe this assumption means public involvement and scrutiny. And I guess it would, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. Speaker, that insufficient hearings were held on this, and that's why I feel that these statements are in order. Now, the premise of supporters is that state expenditures always rise to meet available revenues. This premise is incorrect. In fact, the $900 million North Slope sale was conducted in September 1969, and these funds are not yet exhausted. And will never have been exhausted except for unanticipated delay in pipeline construction. On the contrary, portions of the bonus receipts were invested by the state. It may be argued that past legislatures spend too much money too quickly. But it should be remembered that those legislatures faced an accumulation of unmet human needs and an inadequately paid public sector. Even so, the state would have no cash flow problem today except for unforeseeable pipeline construction delays and unforeseeable inflation. Another premise of supporters is that the $900 million wasn't spent on the right things. In that regard, according to the Foundation support program of state aid in 32 independent local school districts. Also ranked second of all states in percentage of state aid to local school districts, and $900 million in oil lease money has not been used. The state operated school system in rural areas and on military bases got a sizable increase in funds also. Together, state aid to local districts and state operated schools accounted for 86% of the education budget in 1970-1971. In addition, appropriations for the University of Alaska rose from $11.8 million to $17 million. Progressive legislators have resisted the permanent concept in the past. That is fortunate. Where would the state have been in terms of being necessary if the fund had been created in 1970, as Governor Fiedler had proposed? But assuming that the permanent fund is a good idea, is this the time? Can we establish a fund at a time of deficit? The proposed tax on oil and gas in place has not been enacted, and we only can have expenses at the 80. Taxable property must be assessed, and taxes must be collected. Can we be sure that such a tax will meet state revenue needs? Ironically, supporters of the tax on oil and gas in place say the tax is necessary because, in part, pipeline completion may be delayed, and wellhead prices are uncertain. If so, these arguments weigh against creation of a permanent fund now. What are the environmental and economic effects of a permanent fund now under committee substitute for House Bill Number 324? Would the bill tend to accelerate state leasing by the bonus in order to create a permanent fund? I don't know if that question has been answered. Would the bill tend to tie the state to the present system of competition for leases by competitive bonuses in order to build the permanent fund? Or would the bill tend to make the state switch to a system of competition through royalties in order to make the receipts available for operating expenses. In either case, shouldn't the method of competition be the one that will maximize overall state receipts and not be induced by artificially imposed distinctions about how the money received can be used? If money is tied up, won't one result be to overpower objections from fisheries people, etc., about leasing in areas having other resources, since the state will have to accelerate its hunt for operating budget money? If there should be a permanent fund created, how large will it be? What's the upper limit? When are we going to stop bonus lease sales? Will we do keep building it up and building it up just for the sake of building it up? Does the Committee on Finance have long-term projections of the size of the fund and the amount of annual income? Is 90% of the bonus receipts actually the right figure? Why is a fund created by bonuses? If the answer is that they are revenues for a non-renewable resource, why don't royalties go into the fund as well? Why then should any principal taken from oil and gas be used for operating costs of state government? If a permanent fund is to be established, aren't the issues so fundamental as to require public hearings, at least more than we have in this bill? One bill, one hearing, start at 7 o'clock and at about 10:30. 2.5 hours, and at that time, you heard all of the objections and all of the favorable comments on this bill. I say, bull. Shouldn't the affected members of the public, such as parents, educators, and so forth, be heard on so sweeping a departure from past practice? Shouldn't the public comment be received at the same time as other alternatives before the legislature are weighed since the passage of the Committee Substitute to House Bill 324 will influence House action on these alternatives? One possibility or a couple of them, as a matter of fact, dealing with mineral resources in the state of Alaska, and I would say this in passing, but I think that this might be before, that could have been reviewed by the Resources Committee for some reason. That's the other possibility is that the substitute for House Bill 224 would benefit from a judiciary report. Under present law, the Commissioner of Revenue shall invest surplus from the state treasury under Alaska Statute 3110070. Alaska Statute 3710075 says that when the Commissioner of Revenue determines that there are funds in the state treasury which are not invested under 3710070, they may be deposited in financial institutions. Committee substitute for House Bill 224 does not repeal Alaska Statute 3710075, and it appears to be a conflict. Now, the result of these reports is to ban deposits in financial institutions of state money, except for very short term, a whole new set of consequences, and a whole new set of consequences need to be studied if, in fact, that use. If that is not the result of the conflict, what is achieved? Why is a ban on investment in stocks? Maybe it would be a popular thing to do. But if the fund is really permanent, then why not put it in stocks? A permanent fund is to be established. Should the House consider doing it by constitutional amendment? sponsors consider it committed to constitutional amendment approach? If so, why was the constitutional amendment approach rejected? And again, going back to earlier debate, what is the position of the administration? I heard that the administration reluctantly opposed this type of legislation. But was that considered at a time being hearing, the one single hearing was held? And still, has the governor, or did the governor have an adequate opportunity to get input? As I stated earlier, I witnessed Larry Block's testimony, and he said that he wasn't prepared at that time to make comments on the technical nature of the House rules. Further, does the committee substitute for House Bill 324 tie the governor's hands at a critical time by removing one of his options of bridging our projected fiscal gap? Is it fair to future legislatures in which some present legislators may serve to put them in the possible position of having to invade a so-called permanent fund? I say so-called because future legislators can this legislation. Instead, why don't we all simply agree to be more conservative fiscally for the time being? The Committee on Finance can take the lead, of course. If we are to have this substitute for House Bill 324, wouldn't it be better to have a more distant effective date? Well, we've already lost that date, and I want to go into lower. My opposition to this bill. Suppose committee substitute for House Bill 324 passes and no vote for committee sales held. Not only sales are postponed for several years because of environmental, pipeline, coastal zone, outer continental shelf, or other developments or considerations, one last is to be deeply disagreeing about an apparent permanent fund that is really non-existent. Won't cynicism about government be the result? We all know and we make most of you, but that's what we saw from the general position, I understand. In that light, doesn't a 1980 effective date make more sense? In the committee's estimate, with any of bonus money receipts that would create a permanent fund, is the committee making an estimate on the existence or non-existence of the tax on oil and gas in place? Milton Lipton, whom I'm sure most of you know, and others, have argued that passing the tax on oil and gas in place will depress the amounts which companies will give voluntarily as bonuses. Speaker, that sums up the comments that I wanted to make in opposition to the bill. I think you will note that there are sufficient arguments in my testimony that would cause us to follow the effect to take a little bit more time before we make this kind of decision. I have been involved in very serious long-term projected plans, and I refer only to my own private life, but also as an administrator for the First Canadian Corporation, I was put in that position that the finance committee is in, and we must project the future and bring it in goal. I submit to you, Mr. Speaker, that if you pass this bill, you are putting certain people in the box. And because of that, we are going to have to fight all the harder to take other measures that will be coming before this body. talk about grits in the state of Illinois. I believe that there's a great deal of mutual admiration shared amongst this group, more probably in this group than ever at any legislature or practice in the past. Very sincerely, Mr. Speaker, I tell you, I say this in all honesty, that I have a new confidence in Dr. Bass. I am such a student of Hospital 324. I would urge that you join me in voting no.
Further discussion, Mr. Wells.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't want to belabor what the Congress will fill the meeting with the truth. But just in closing, I don't think we've adequately studied all the ultimate forces of our revenues. I think by not doing so, I think we're derelict in our duty by not doing it. I think a bill of this nature needs more comprehensive study. In a few minutes, we're going to be taking a vote. I think we all ought to take a hard look at exactly what we're doing. As I said before, I agree with the concept. I think the mechanics are too prohibitive. I think we're fooling the public. Because if this bill passes, reflected by Mr. Anderson, there would be no need to go to any bonus sale. We would go to other types of sales.
In all actuality, I doubt very seriously if any money would be put into the so-called permanent fund.
Yeas, 11 nays, 2 excused.
The substitute proposal number 324 has passed the House. Mr. Murray.
Speaker, I'll move to ask the consent that the roll call on the three substitute for House Bill 324 be considered the roll call on the effective date of the vote.
No objection, so ordered. Please, our daily calendar brings us to unfinished business. Does anything come before the House on unfinished business? Mr. Wallace.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to give those of you consideration of the committee questions for House Bill.
Consideration is noted. Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, will it maybe revert to introduction again?
You have the floor, sir.
Mr. Speaker, in the gallery behind me, a gentleman I served with in the first state legislature, and he spent a lot of time here, been to the House and the Senate. One time he was called the elephant fellow, Bob Lott.
I did appreciate the article and possibly we'll follow that sort of trend of future. It's very refreshing and very different from public press.
Substitute for Senate Bill 230 amendment relating to the taking of animal suits.